Welcome to the Media Cat Magazine podcast. I'm your host, Mike Pigger, editor at the magazine. And for today's pod, I'm happy to welcome two guests, Annalisa Roy and Kirsty Sadler. Annalisa was previously head of strategy at Grey London and has also worked for AMV, BBDO, BBH and Publicis. She now runs her own brand and creative consultancy and is here today with her client, Kirsty, who is VP Global Brand Marketing at Speedo International. Kirsty has worked agency side as well, DDB, BBH New York and Anomaly, and was head of strategy at BBH London before making the jump into the brand world with Leon Restaurants and then moving on to Speedo 2 years ago. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you.
I sped through that intro really fast, so hopefully, you know, everybody will have understood what I was saying there. There's lots of like acronyms and things like that, so I was expecting to stumble, but it went quite well. I just thought I'd get that out there straight away. How are you both doing today? You're sort of jetting in from different places around the world. Are you both sort of in the UK now, or what's happening?
Yes, I am firmly in Southwest London. I think Kirsty has a more jet set lifestyle than I do.
Oh, I don't know. But yeah, I'm not far from Annalisa, actually, up the road in Southeast London. But yes, I have been on the West Coast of the US for the last 2.5 weeks because our Speedo America office is in Los Angeles.
How are things over there? Because I know Hawaii's on fire at the moment. How is the West Coast of the US in general? You are now the spokesperson for the West Coast of the US.
Yes, I will try and do my best on that then. I think actually the California wildfire situation is not as desperate as it was last year. But obviously the news from Maui, I think, is very upsetting. It's a really diverse location. A biodiverse location, and I'm not sure that's something they've experienced so much recently. But interesting, they've actually had more of an overcast few recent months, certainly in California and also for the city of LA. So luckily it was sunny when I was there, but in an okay way compared to last year.
Yeah, it just occurred to me because of Speedo. I know it's not a surf brand, but I just suddenly had a thought that like maybe you guys are sort of tapped into parts of the world where, you know, beaches and sort of beach weather. I don't know if that counts for Hawaii. I've never actually been, but it seems like a surf place at least. But.
Yeah, very much is. And no, I mean, we embrace, I think, all aspects of the water world. So yes, there's quite a fair bit of stand-up paddleboarding that we would be seen involved with. And actually, yeah, quite a lot of what we produce is used for surfing, although we're not a surfing brand per se. But yes.
Ah, paddleboarding. I almost got into that one point, and then I realized you can't just take a paddleboard on the Thames. You have to like have licenses and other permissions. But it looked interesting. I do want to try it one day. Okay, I'm already getting off topic, so I'm gonna reel myself back in. Our theme for the magazine in August is fit for purpose. So I wanted to perhaps explore that a little bit and just talk about careers and various things. So yeah, the theme is fit for purpose, and it's talking about does anything work today at all? It's sort of looking at all the various strikes around the world and in the UK and things just not seeming to work. I don't know if it's pandemic and cost of living and all sorts of other factors. And so the question that we were posing in the magazine was, do we need a sort of radical rethink of everything? And is effective change only ever incremental? Or, you know, do you have to do big crazy things to make change actually happen? I just wondered how this theme speaks to both of you thinking on your careers. You know, have you managed to achieve small changes as you've gone through, which are just as effective as a big, large one? Or, you know, how does the theme speak to either of you?
So it certainly speaks to me. And I think more than sort of thinking back on my career, which I'll touch upon later on, in terms of changes, what I think is interesting about this theme is that we're living in a moment in time where culturally we're actually obsessed with instant gratification. And I think the reason for that is that social media platforms have created this really warped marketplace where a business can grow exponentially really quickly and then actually grows much faster than the brand of the business grows. So it's a classic example that recently Gymshark. So Gymshark is a business that's grown almost exclusively through influencer content. And then most recently, they actually reported huge losses despite sales increase. So what happened to them really is that they've grown as a business so fast, but the brand didn't really catch up. And so they found themselves having this massive sort of price elasticity problem, and that's always related to brand equity. But building brand takes a long time. And I think no one really wants to spend that much time because the results
are seen in a year time or in 2 years time, and we're so obsessed with the here and now at the moment, then it's really almost impossible to convince anybody that there is merit in actually building your brand at the time, because that's going to build your business. And I'm sorry, I've answered your question very much focused on marketing world, but that's the first thing that came to mind when I saw this thing.
No, I mean, it makes sense. I mean, I think with these types of questions, it's like, you know, there's probably three or four angles that you can come at easily to address them. I don't know. I guess it's quite an interesting one to sort of get into. Kirsty, what's your experience with the theme change and rethinking everything? Does anything work right now? What are your thoughts?
Oh, I think a lot works. I think a lot more works than is given kind of credit for, if I'm honest. I think a lot of what we see in media and in news and everything is consistently framing where we're at quite negatively, which sort of becomes then a self-perpetuating thing. But I think that for me personally, the theme speaks to me quite a lot, because I think generally it's just part of your own growth, I think, to be able to go through and experience change, learn from it and adapt. I also think, for just always having worked with brands, the notion of purpose is also extremely valuable. I think that obviously it's really changed over time. I think obviously it just used to be about knowing why as a brand you existed and having values against that. I think now obviously it's got kind of a sense of morality and it needs positive purpose against it. But, you know, that's a good thing, because I think capitalism has been an amazing engine for growth, hasn't it? And therefore brands need to play their part and be responsible. So I think the idea of purpose as being held up and challenging brands to make sure they're making a positive contribution is a really, really good thing. And I think actually also the more people, or let's call them consumers, have been educated around that, the more demanding they are of what businesses are doing, whether they're standing behind that. And also when we talk in terms of sort of short-termism, long-termism, I would agree very much so with what you were saying, Annalisa. On the challenge we have is a lot of our framings and habits are now based on short-termism, whereas actually more than ever, we need long-termism in sort of terms of thinking, in terms of what brands are prepared to commit to and plan for. And also people, you know, I think you kind of want to find your value set and hold with that for as long as you can.
Yeah, long-term, short-term is interesting, because it's, you've got like, yeah, like you say, trying to build a business over a long period of time, but perhaps demanding things in the short term. And then there's things like climate change, et cetera, which is kind of like this long-term problem, but almost like has short-term impact. Like we can literally, before we started this recording, we were talking about, you know, wildfires, et cetera, raging around the world. In terms of thinking about your kind of experience that you've both had on sort of agency side, when you're brought in by brands or, you know, asked to pitch on something that isn't fit for purpose, I mean, is that what they're trying to achieve? Is they've sort of lost their purpose, or they're trying to find a certain purpose? Do clients always know what they want? Is that a fair question when they brief people, or do you find that's changed over the years in terms of what they want versus whatever brief they were providing you with?
It's a funny question, that. I think...
Yeah, I sort of melded a couple of questions together. Sorry.
Yeah, so I think most clients know deep down what they need. They may not necessarily have all the tools to express it in an effective brief. So sometimes it's a little bit of kind of extracting of information that needs to happen. I think in general, most of the times we've been brought in really, and our kind of purpose really as a strategist from an outside point of view is to bring cultural context within the organization. Most organizations have suffered from navel gazing quite a bit. Not because of their own fault, it just happens. You're all in the same environment. You're always looking at the same things. You're always convinced about the fact that you need to talk about how great your product is to a bunch of people and they're going to buy it. So you're in that sort of bubble, and we sort of almost come in to burst that bubble and open it up to the world and show, you know, people, real people's lives and how a brand or a product may fit within a person's lives and the context in a meaningful way. So more or less, that's always what, you know, I've been sort of brought in to do. I don't think I've had many clients or many sort of brands I've worked on that weren't fit for purpose. I think there are the real instances, which I won't name names, where I found myself having to work on perhaps a pitch for a product or a brand that's, you know, sold products that I really did not agree with. And that probably is the most challenging setup, you know, you could possibly have. And finding
a way of making that product or that offering attractive. It's a little bit like selling your soul to the devil sometimes. So yes, can be very, very difficult.
Is that more sort of from an ethical point of view? Like, yes. I don't know, like an oil company or something?
100% from an ethical point of view, yes. I've had quite a few of those over the years. And some of them I just didn't work on. I just walked away from. Some of them I couldn't walk away from, so I had to make it work. And I think it's very difficult. It's very difficult. I'm very lucky now that I've set up on my own and actually just have really great clients who are all more than fit for purpose. So I don't have to make those choices anymore. But I think from an ethical point of view, it can be a little bit difficult.
Yeah, I suppose that's interesting as people progress through their careers and you can perhaps get to a point where like it's almost like, can you have ethics when you're sort of quite junior in a career and like you just have to do stuff that you're told, and then as you get older you can get to be more opinionated. I mean, I don't know if everyone agrees with that, but do you think that that's kind of the way it goes a little bit in sort of the marketing industry in terms of?
I think it's a generational thing, actually. I think that growing up, I spent 20 years in advertising agencies, and when I was growing up as a strategist, I didn't think I had the right to have ethics around what I was doing. I just did what I was told because I wasn't very senior and I just had to get on with it. But actually, newer generations are so much more open and very, they live truthfully by their values, and they will tell you they don't want to work on something they don't agree with. As I had a strategy not that long ago, I had quite a few of my strategists, very junior strategists, who were very clear about what they would and what they wouldn't get involved with. And I had a lot of respect for that. I think, and I always, always made sure that I, you know, helped them to live by those values and worked by those values. And I think it's really important for new generations to be able to say that and actually act upon it, as opposed to us kind of, you know, in the past carrying away, going, no, 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 I just need to get on with it because I've been told I should do it. So it's very different, I think, these days.
Yeah, I suppose that's an interesting, because I don't know how that flows up or down from, you know, leadership, et cetera, people at the top versus what a junior strategist may want to do or not do. I don't know if there's ever challenges there, shall we say, in terms of business vision versus people having to deliver things.
Yes, I mean, ultimately, I think what would happen is you need to understand where your values are and how you can align yourself to an organization that has similar values. But if you find yourself in an agency that doesn't offer that, then you know that you're not in the right place. But, you know, being in that position where I was running a department, I wanted to make sure that all my strategists were happy with what they were doing and they were living and working in a, you know, context that made them feel comfortable. Obviously, there's always issues with that in terms of, you know, the growth of the business or where the business is going. But I think it's very important to align yourself to those values and follow through with those values in your career.
Yeah, no, definitely. I wanted to briefly talk about change. So sort of radical change versus incremental change. And I just, I guess from, you know, from agency side and brand side, how you both see it, you know, obviously radical change is harder, but where do you stand on sort of making big changes within brands? How do you go about those? Are they always the best thing to do to actually make something new happen? Or, you know, do you prefer to just do lots of little things?
I don't think it's that sort of so binary in a kind of, is it incremental change versus radical change? I think it's like, you know, I suppose any good strategy, really, is the change that you're going for. Like the right response to the question, the challenge, the opportunity. I think that there is something difficult at the moment in the climate that we've had post-COVID and with some of the sort of headwinds that businesses face on going all out for just radical change per se. But I definitely am a massive advocate of radicalism because I think it's the only way we'll solve some of the challenges we face, which are just so significant, whether that be human health, health of the planet or other. But I think that I think always have a big vision, always have a radical vision, because I think it's better for you as an individual because you feel part of something greater, but also it is likely going to be the best response to the question or the challenge or the opportunity. But I think the two parts to it is the way you go about realizing that radical change, I think does need to definitely be broken down and be made up of smaller parts. because then you're more likely to be successful. And also, I think that's how you bring people with you, because I think you can sell them on a bigger radical vision, but you make it feel and you just make it more practical by breaking it down to those smaller parts. Also, just back to the point around challenges for businesses, you're less likely then to have your radical thing taken away in terms of budget removed or, you know, the plan being scrapped. And I think that, yes, unfortunately, you know, we do deal with looking at sales results on weekly, you know, I mean, I used to, when I worked at Leon, we'd get sales results every 3 hours, every single day, you know. So, I mean, you can, you know, that's pretty intense. And for a very adaptive, agile system, you could act on those sales results every 3 hours if you wanted to. But, you know, obviously that's not good for the sustainability of the business, but you have to sort of try and flatten out some of those peaks and troughs by keeping your plan going. So that's how I'd see it. So absolutely for radicalism, but probably would advocate for being a little bit more incremental on the way you realize it.
Yeah, that makes sense. Not to like glorify what marketers do or anything, but it just suddenly made me think of like a general on a battlefield and sort of, you know, are you reacting to, I don't know, a couple of troops dying here on the left, or, you know, you sort of still keeping the vision going, and, you know, do you stay strong, or do you react to like little things if you're getting like 3 hour updates? I don't know.
You have to do both. I think you have to do both. You know, you have to, again, it's how you weave together what your bigger vision is and why you believe you're there and why you keep, you know, your people feeling good about being there as well. So you have to keep that as the overall picture, which also ties up to then maintaining the brand you are. And so much of, I think, branding and marketing is actually consistency. So there's that. But, you know, then there is also, you have to be reactive and you have to have agility. And I think that's sort of agility and resilience, I think, are probably two of the best kind of skills or traits to have, I think, both within marketing and for a brand per se.
I was just wanted to ask, like, in terms of, say, the pandemic and cost of living, etc., I mean, you could apply this to, you can answer this as a sort of speedo answer, or just a, you know, you can both answer this just generally how you're finding it. Do you find that, you know, brands are taking less risks in the last few years or more, would you say, in terms of what they're doing? I know it's a bit of a hard one to answer. I'm just thinking like early on in the pandemic when there was, you know, brands were sort of semi-reinventing themselves or pivoting to do different things, and you know, it felt like everyone was kind of acting a little bit like a startup. And I just wondered, you know, has that all settled back down, or, you know, have people like brands learned certain things in terms of being a lot more, I don't know, faster and agile from early pandemic days that they're now doing? Are you seeing any of that sort of stuff? Or is it just sort of back to how it was before pandemic times?
From my experience, I think there was something quite illuminating about COVID and being within a brand at that time, because a lot of brands and businesses had to find their agility if they hadn't found it before. So, you know, just our whole system, way of life, way of living changed. And, you know, government communications through to how hospitals were set up and run through to how communities existed, it all had to change. And obviously out of what was a very dark time for a number of reasons, I think there was the illumination of how you can navigate that and how agile you can be if you have to be. So I think there were some brilliant case studies actually and discussions that came out for the world of branding and marketing after that. In terms of are brands being more or less radical, it's very difficult, I think, to say. I would answer it more from the fact that how radical or not brands and businesses are being largely does come from the top. It comes from leadership. And I think, you know, it really always will. And I think I'd hope that there is, more radicalism in brands, even if it's on a small scale, partly by necessity and partly through learnings following COVID, if indeed the business has survived. But I suppose those would be my thoughts on that. And I think in this day and age as well, I think a lot of people don't really want to just sit, by and large, I think, in a sort of maintenance position. I think that we're restless, you know, we're quite short-termist, we want the new, we want the different, and that's in everything, you know, from the food on our shelves to what we get on Netflix. And it's the same in our jobs, you know, we give a disproportionate amount of our time in our life to the work that we do. And I think that's particularly the case for the newer generation entering the world of work, but actually for all of us. So I think there's also something cultural, as well as the importance of leadership, is the sort of atmosphere and the reward that you give your people that you work with. And that can come from trying out new and different things.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I know I'm still banging on about change. I'm sort of keeping this as a random theme for this podcast. But I just wondered, sort of both of you looking through your careers, how have you managed big, hairy change when it's come about? Whether you've led something or just been part of something. Kirsty, you were speaking about like breaking products up into smaller pieces. I mean, is that kind of always the way, like you say, if budgets get cut or something, you've at least achieved 80% of what you were going to do with a big goal. I just wondered, from perhaps like a leadership point of view, you know, I don't know, training people up internally to do a thing that they don't know how to do, or something they've never done before, or, you know, complete different side of the business or complete different approach. I just wondered how you both approach those kinds of things when you're sort of encouraging people to embrace change, basically.
I think you've just got to make it fun and exciting. I think you've got to kind of reduce the sense of the unknown and what might be daunting in that. And I think you've got to be able to talk up what the positives and the opportunities are, even if you've set out what the destination is and you don't really know how to get there. So I think the idea of talking about the learning from it, or how it's opportunities to work in different ways or with different people, or, you know, you have to motivate, I think, both yourself and your teams, and keep that motivation up. So that, I would say, has always worked well from my point of view, because, you know, people feed off positivity far more than they do off negativity. I know that seems really simplistic, but I think, you know, whether that was at Leon and working with restaurant teams and trying to train them on quite a challenging menu, but understanding the stories behind why we were serving that menu and launching it, or whether it was getting to integrate the comms planning and brand planning side of the department at the BBH London strategy department, or, you know, many other examples. So I guess, yeah, some simple premises there that I think make it go better rather than worse.
Yeah, it sounds a little bit like we had a theme earlier this year of hope and kindness. And there's some leadership, I guess, approaches out there that, you know, talk about like leaning into that more, and like you don't have to sort of lead with an iron fist or a stick or whatever, like you're saying, like leaning into the positivity perhaps of what you're trying to achieve. I know one of the things, obviously, with our theme, Fit for Purpose, when I heard that, you know, we were setting up this podcast, I thought that it sounded like it fitted really well with Speedos, like sort of forming the backbone of your thinking or something like that. Maybe it's just me, but does that ever sort of enter the Speedos world of things being fit for purpose? I mean, is that very much part of swimwear these days? And I don't know, from a technical point of view or just a fit point of view, I don't know.
Yeah, there's probably two things I'd say against it. Yeah, there's one is ultimately, I mean, we're a performance brand and have been for nearly 100 years now. So I think the immense amount of experience and expertise and development that actually goes into something that is going to ultimately be quite small. You know, we work with small amounts of fabric. Obviously, our quintessential Speedo, the men's brief, they're really small. But so are our goggles, our caps, all of those things. So it is an amazing amount of kind of work, expertise, fabric understanding and technology that goes into them, and particularly actually our fast skin race suits. So the sort of literal fit for purpose. I think there is also something, though, when we think about purpose. I mean, swimming is the only sport that saves your life. Yet drowning is the third cause of deaths globally, which is a tragedy. And so I think that from a purpose point of view for us, a lot of it at the moment, and that Annalisa and I are both working on, is how we make the water more equitable, how we really make sure that every child is having their fair opportunity to learn to swim, because actually it could save their lives, but it's also very rewarding. I mean, the enjoyment that people can have in the water can be immense. So I think that, you know, for us, that is that's an eternal platform, because for every child that enters the world, they need that opportunity and they need to have their chance to find the enjoyment in the water. So I think it very much is a thought and a phrase that works for us both practically as well as kind of on a larger scale.
That sounds a really interesting approach. And I was actually going to ask you next, well, if you guys were able to say what you might be working on or things that you're cooking up. I was going to ask, actually, do you guys get much involved in sort of wild swimming, or, you know, does that ever touch on things that the brand does at all?
I could speak to this a little bit, but so we do have, actually it's just, we showcase it more on Instagram with the Outsiders Club, but we very much have a community-led approach there, supporting different groups who swim in the outdoors or wild swim around the UK. And I think it's been a brilliant thing, because that really developed through COVID and lockdown. And it's also quite female-led outdoor swimming. And actually, what I was speaking to earlier there in terms of the purpose that we're focused on in Speedo and making the water more equitable, that platform for us is called Swim United. And actually, we find that we've had tremendous support from outdoor swim clubs and groups and individuals for that Swim United platform. And that is because they understand the value of swim. And, you know, they want to make sure that everybody else has that too.
That sounds really great. Well, we should put a link in the show notes to that, if people can want to check that out, get involved in any way. I know it's not brands remit to sort of solve all of the world's problems or anything like that necessarily. Sometimes they can get involved in them. I just wondered, obviously with the UK, I think the swimming waters, wild swim waters, the water quality, etc., is some of the worst in Europe, which obviously would prove a bit of a problem to like encouraging people to wild swim. I used to wild swim, and I sort of slowed down with it now because of that reason. I just wondered, is that anything that you guys get involved in, or is it sort of on your radar? And like I said, it's not necessarily Speedo's thing to solve it, but I just wondered if that comes into thinking in any way. I don't know, putting pressure on governments, etc.
We are aware of it, and we do support. There's a number of outdoor swim groups that are very connected into that, particularly because I think some of the more high profile kind of locations and sort of lobby groups, if you like, are, for example, up in the Lake District, so Lake Windermere and things, which is where we support a number of outdoor swim groups. So we are aware of it, and we do support it, not as actively, I think, as maybe some other brands are doing. I mean, I would actually, back to one of the comments you made preceding your question, was around, is it, you know, up to brands to solve problems? And this for me is a core example. It's like, yes, the utility companies do need to step up. I mean, it needs to be a core part of how they operate, what they do, and the problems they're solving, for sure. And I think that this is where, again, for any brands, you absolutely need to understand your context and what category or what your sphere of influence is. And you should be making sure you're solving problems there first and foremost before perhaps getting into any other kind of issues or purpose-led campaigns.
No, that makes sense. I guess it was a bit of a tangent, but I just suddenly thought about wild swimming, and I was suddenly like, I wonder how much you guys get involved in that.
Very relevant, yeah.
Yeah. I know we're almost out of time, actually. So I guess I just wanted to, I suppose, round up with the theme in general. Are there things that are exciting you both about the year ahead? I guess you're working on something at the moment, so I suppose that's perhaps exciting. Is there anything more that you can sort of tell us about the things that you're cooking up at the moment?
We're working on probably one of the most exciting projects we've had, actually. We're working on the Olympics. So we're looking at our Olympics campaign for Speedo. And I think it's ironically one of the easiest briefs in a way, because Speedo has such an amazing Olympic heritage. It's really not hard to position it in a meaningful way. But I think what we're trying to do with this year's campaign is really opening up the spirit of Speedo to everybody. Because as Kirsty was saying earlier, you know, the work that goes into the suits that are made for athletes is enormous. But I think what's amazing about Speedo is it always will use that knowledge and insight into all of the products cascading down from professional athletes to people learning to swim. So it's actually, you know, something that is incredibly generous in the sense of, you know, product development. But also, I've only ever seen that happening in the car manufacturing world, where, you know, you'll get your speeding, you know, your sort of race car, and then you sort of take some bits of it and put it into your daily usage cars. So I think We really focus on actually opening that a little bit more to the world and showing a different side. I guess that's as far as I can say, but showing a different side to swimming that people may have not considered if they're not swimmers. So that's where we're at with that. Do add anything, Kirsty, and sort of slap me on the wrist if I said too much. But
no, I think that's perfect. And I think, yeah, we do, back to the fact that we see ourselves as having a role in kind of furthering and energizing the culture of swim. Mm. And then if we do that well, we will, of course, sell swimwear. I think that's very important for us, that that's what we're doing, not just we're all here to sell swimwear. And that also, for me, goes back to the question of fit for purpose, is kind of knowing what you're doing and why you're here. And so, yes, I agree with everything that Annalisa said there. And therefore, it is, how do we celebrate the sport of swimming, the activity of swimming, how you do that and what it gives you. And then, of course, we will place our swimwear within that context. But that's a far more exciting framing, particularly in the year that, you know, there's the sporting event like the Olympics, which brings everybody together, and there can be so much positivity from that.
Yeah, it feels like a pretty good time for that, for some positivity. Yeah, like we said earlier this year, maybe it was February, we had the theme of hope and kindness. And like a lot of our themes, we can probably do in any month, to be honest with you. They're kind of a bit eternal, but, or at least, you know, they feel like they're something that, I don't know, applies to this year and maybe last year and hopefully next year. Yeah, you know, after pandemic, cost of living, all sorts of things just keep sort of hammering us down. And yeah, positivity, bringing people together. I like the idea of the culture of swim, and I'd never really thought about the fact that it's a thing that saves your life necessarily as well. So I've drifted off a bit from swimming, so maybe I need to get back into it myself.
I just wanted to say the one last thing about swimming that I think no one really thinks about too much, and how that creates really attention around who can swim and who can't. It's actually quite a basic human right, and we never really framed it in that way before. But it can save your life, and if you're not able to do it, then you won't be able to save your life. So I think not only is a basic human right, it also gives you opportunities that you may not have otherwise. It gives you choices of where you want to work and what conditions you want to work in. And so for underprivileged people who can't swim, that world becomes so much smaller. I think that's one thing that we're really, especially with Swim United, we're really focused on. And it's really important to remind ourselves of that.
Yeah, definitely. I was about to say it's without being too weird about it, that it's almost something primal as well, that, you know, once you're in the water, it just sort of feels. But then I suddenly thought, well, I was called a water baby, and because I was one of those kids that before my parents knew I could swim, they saw me in a pool and panicked because they thought I was drowning. But actually, I was fine. I just learned to swim. So I was in the water from a very early age. So maybe that doesn't apply to everybody. But there is something really calming about being in the water, I think. Even just floating, you know.
Yeah, and I think there's a real role for it now as well, as it intersects with mental health, which I think we've seen in particular coming through with outdoor swim. But I think, yes, the other point is it really is the final frontier in terms of disconnection from the digital world, which I think we know we all need. So, you know, I think that's actually quite powerful. And that sort of idea of the benefit of the blue space, as is very different from the experience of the blue screen.
Oh, yeah, good point. And also perhaps with the rise of wellness in the last few years and self-care, it feels like it fits into that really well as well. Yeah, I keep thinking more questions, but running out of time, and this is how I do. Fascinating conversation. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on the Media Cat Magazine podcast.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks very much.